Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
And today's host at Faith Radio is, where's the envelope? Is Denzel Washington. No, wait. Bill Arnold. That's it. That's the host today. Bill Arnold here. Good morning, everybody. It's Monday. I know you're getting your day started, hopefully on the right foot, whatever foot that is. We're glad to have you with us today. I hope your weekend was well. I hope you feel refreshed, ready to go. I always like to start the day with a little bit of Bible wisdom, and I call this my Bible brush-up, things that I should definitely know at the top of my head. And here's a question for you, Rebecca, and here it is. What is the youngest book in the Old Testament?
The youngest book. As in, it was written most recently.
Yes, of all the books in the Old Testament, what is the book most recently written?
Malachi?
That is correct. That was written about 400 B.C. But I've been calling it Malachi all this time. Oh. So I appreciate that you, in fact, have corrected me on that.
You could be right, I suppose.
All right, here's another one. There are 12 tribes of Israel, and they were the 12 tribes who made up the Old Testament Israel. Each tribe was what?
Oh, you want me to name 12?
No, not name them.
12 of them?
No, where did they come from?
Well, the 12 sons of Jacob.
Awesome. There you go. Another two for two.
Actually, the 12 sons of Jacob, but Joseph didn't have a tribe. His two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, had their own tribe.
Okay, now here's the trick question. What was Jacob's oldest son's name?
Reuben.
Uh-huh. You know, they also named a very delicious sandwich after him.
It's good for the memory.
It is good for the memory. And some of the powerhouse inside that Reuben is the sauerkraut. Did you know that? That's a fermented food, which is actually very good for you.
I had heard that.
Yes.
And you have to find ways to work it into recipes, because other than the Reuben, I'm not sure that I know of very many great tasting sauerkraut recipes.
It's fermented cabbage is what it is. So if you eat a lot of sauerkraut, I would imagine you spend a lot of time alone.
And that's what people's food dreams are made of. Food Network shows all about the sauerkraut.
Exactly. Now, how many, and here's the last question, it's not really a Bible question, it's more of a trivia question. How many Bibles are sold or given away every year in the world?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. Yeah, I hope it's a lot.
It's a very large number. There's your hint. Give it to me. What is it?
300 million.
Actually, 100 million. That's a good guess, though. 100 million.
Well, maybe it should be 300 million this year.
I agree. The Bible is the most widely distributed and best-selling book in the world. That's why we should be talking about that book nonstop.
That's what it is. The Bible. The book.
Yes.
Number one.
We've got a great show today. We're going to have our friend, Patrick Albanese. We're going to talk about actually a very heartbreaking story that happened that affected the two of us in a most personal way over the weekend. Mm. Headlines of the news in many outlets, and it was involving a very sad and tragic death of a dear friend of ours. And boy, we're going to talk about fake news and how fake news proliferates, and we turn around, read it, believe it, and then talk about it and gossip, and I say, let's stop that. That's what we're going to talk about. And then we have Adam Carrington coming up. He's the professor at Hillsdale College, and he is going to give us some reflections on what went on at CPAC. CPAC, that stands for Certified Public Accountants Conference, I think. I'm not entirely sure. Am I close? All right. I'm not a horribly informed human being, but we're going to talk about some of the coalition points around the president's administration, and that should be interesting. I will do my best to stay awake during that segment. All right, it's 7 minutes after the hour. We'll take a break. Be back with Patrick Albanese. Stay tuned. Nice to have you with us.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
All right.
I'd unravel every riddle.
How does a muskrat protect his musk? Courage. Hey, Patrick Albany's on the line. You have your own theme song, Patrick.
I earned it.
I know you
did. I earned every bit of that theme song.
I know
Good morning,
you did.
Denzel.
Good morning. Say, both of us are still feeling
a fantastic Bill Arnold impression, by the way, Denzel.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, we're still both suffering a little bit over the loss of our dear friend, Daryl, and that was something that made headline news. And what really prompted me to have this conversation with you this morning, in addition to the fact that it was all over the news, is that he was a friend and that it exposed to me and to you how fake news works and how irresponsible journalism happens, because everything we read, we discovered more or less to be false.
Yes. And it's disturbing that in this race to be first with this sensational news, you know, as much as we, of course, adored this man, it's not like he was the kind of person that, you know, if you threw his name out in front of the average person, they'd say, oh, yes, Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the magic community, of course, a big name. He was one of those. He's like the Cher.
He's like one of the Beatles.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably not a performer out there that hasn't, if they're not currently using one of his innovations, mm-hmm. they have in their career used something of his.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody knows who he is. But, you know, when you're on the front page of the Drudge Report, and I was stunned to see that. I was like, well, the Magic Castle is a world famous place. Everybody kind of knows what it is.
Let's tell our audience exactly what happened. He was scheduled to be performing at the world famous Magic Castle, a place that you managed for 9 years, so you know the place well.
It just felt like nine.
Felt like nine, yeah. And they were wondering Friday night where he was. So they called in another performer, another friend of ours, and they did discover, they found him in a closet. He had committed suicide.
Yeah, and it actually wasn't a closet, because the backstage of the showroom that he was performing in, and I know it well, and I know what the protocol would be. You know, you wouldn't call in a backup performer unless you felt for certain you had a no-show, mm-hmm. and there would be a process. You'd be knocking on the dressing room door, and then you'd, if you didn't get an answer, you have a key, you'd open it up just to see if you would see the magician's equipment there.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say, well, if his equipment's here, he's meandering around the club. It's mm-hmm. a very large club.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't see the equipment, you'd go down to the front desk and say, has he checked in with his guest list? And if he hadn't, then you'd say, I got to make a call,
because mm-hmm.
he's not here. And he's due on in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, behind in that showroom, there was a curtain that just covered a cabinet, which to the untrained eye, you could call a closet.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a cabinet where people would sometimes keep their costumes and performing equipment if they were just going to leave it overnight. So when the replacement came in, he slid open that curtain, and that's where they found him.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the initial reports was that he was in his underwear only, which turns out to be entirely false. And
entirely
false. Another comment was made that, oh, that was an illusion that he was working on that just went awry. And of course,
a trick that neither one of us have ever heard of.
One that we've never heard of, and I was friends with him for 35 years, and I never knew him ever to do any illusion ever.
Yeah, right. He did. Not only
sleight
did
of
he
hand
just,
artist.
He's sleight of hand artist, but he was such a professional that he would be the one that if he really was trying something new like this, he would have a couple of people there saying, give me a hand just in case something goes wrong.
Right, right. Yeah. All right, let's just talk about how it affected us. I saw over 500 comments. I read just a handful of them. They were so vile and so disgusting. And is there a complete loss of empathy and compassion in the world?
Well, there is. I don't. I'm sure if you were to dig up my sordid history as a teenager, you might have found me making jokes about stuff that I did not understand,
mm-hmm.
that I had not maybe experienced personally in life, like
mm-hmm.
a suicide,
mm-hmm.
that affects you deeply, where you say, this is not a laughing matter, not a joking matter. And I also do understand that sometimes people deal with pain and things they don't understand with humor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like these opportunities to make jokes are going to disappear and you'll say, gee, that would have been really funny had I said that. It's like, you know, there are some topics – just leave it. And
mm-hmm.
it was much more vile than I would have ever thought. This is dark stuff that it's one thing for people to think it, but another thing for them to say, oh, heck,
mm-hmm.
let me just put that down there, attach my name to it and hit post.
Right, right.
It was very disturbing to see hundreds of really bad comments.
Mm-hmm. Now, Patrick, if we look at this from a bigger picture, and this is one story that we had actually true information on, and yet we saw so much false information in the story. Now let's extrapolate. That's a word I don't get to use very often before 7 o'clock. Let's extrapolate to what we read in the newspaper all day long. What does that say about the reliability of what we're reading?
Well, you know, you've known me for a long time, and you know that for it's got to be at least 10 years ago that I initially adopted my 24 to 48 hour waiting period before forming a factual opinion, if I may, may coin a phrase. But I am always stunned that within minutes of something happening, people throw out conjecture, but then they remove the conjecture words and they state things as fact. And I just feel it's best 24 to 48 hours, so much information comes out that's going to have you backtracking. But it seems like the media doesn't care about backtracking. They don't even like to say, oh, here's our correction on that statement we made yesterday where we said this happened and this happened and this happened. It's that, you know, the typical let's bury it on page A32 at the bottom. By the way, we got the name of the murder victim wrong. It's like, it's kind of an important piece of information, isn't it?
Right.
Oh, here it is next to the ad for a tanning salon on the back of the newspaper.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a great passage in 2 Corinthians, and it says, brothers and sisters, stop thinking like children. In regard to evil, be infants, but in your thinking, be adults.
Ooh.
How about that? Now, it seems that there's some awfully childish comments that get made in our everyday discourse, especially on the internet, because people think that they can make this snarky remark sitting at their computer in their basement, and it's not going to hurt anybody, and it's going to be their two cents. And I think, well, we never used to be that way. Did we?
No.
Because we'd have to say it to someone's face.
You know, I think when you had more monopolies operating in the television and, say, in the newspaper, that they could maybe be a little bit more careful. But now with these clickbait headlines where we have to get clicks, we have to be the first one, we have to be the people that everybody comes to first, they get more sensationalistic in the headlines, and maybe a little bit more I don't want to say that they're outright lying, but they withhold pieces of information so that you maybe form an incorrect conclusion. And it is disturbing. You know, it's you say to yourself, well, now not only have you tainted the truth, but when the real truth comes along, I am doubtful of it.
True. All right, Patrick, we're gonna take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines. It is 17 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Bill Arnold here, sitting in for Denzel Washington. I'll be right back. Minutes after the hour. Good morning. It's Monday and it's another week. So we got that to look forward to, which is nice. All right. I'm talking to my friend Patrick Albanese, and I'm trying to bring him up to speed on what happened last night, because I'm sure you were sleeping. There was the Best Picture announced last night up close to 11:30, and the winner went to La La Land. Ooh, and then they changed their mind.
Yeah.
They switched it to Moonlight, which is the winner. And they handed Warren Beatty and Faye and the envelope, and that's like handing Grandpa the envelope. He can't get that right, can he?
No. Well, first off, he's not even supposed to have that letter opener, I think, at this point. Thing's dangerous.
Yeah. So how do you get that much media in one room and get something that significant wrong? Have it be so wrong?
Well, if you're like me, and I know I am, you assume it was intentional. I'm sorry, but I look back to when Steve Harvey, which was it, Miss Universe, Miss America? One of the contests. So he makes a mistake. Now, the very next day, and these are television properties that were really falling in the ratings, Miss America, Miss Universe, people weren't watching him anymore, and suddenly created a viral video. Okay, somebody's a bit of a laughingstock, but now hundreds of millions of views on YouTube later, people are like, did you see? So there's a part of me that says, all right, you know, these people went into the Oscars saying, we're going to kind of trash middle America. So a lot of people are saying they're not going to watch because we're going to turn this into an anti-Donald Trump protest. You know, I try to decide, do I watch the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which is a bunch of politicians pretending to be entertainers, or do I watch the Academy Awards, which is a bunch of entertainers pretending to be politicians? I get confused. And I do think that after the Steve Harvey episode a couple of years ago, do you think there's any way that they would not have checks and balances in places to just say, you know, let's make sure this never happens? So there's a part of me that says, okay, conspiracy guy, which, by the way, all conspiracy theories are kept in Area 51. They're all there. That's where they're all hatched.
Don't insult my intelligence. I know where they are.
Yeah. And JFK is guarding them, by the way. JFK and Elvis.
Of course, they
rotate shifts because you can't do that. But I think to myself, all right, you know, they've gone viral. Suddenly everybody's talking about the Academy Awards that didn't air. Suddenly everybody knows about this movie Moonlight that they never heard of. And this movie La La Land, which I haven't seen, but everybody who's seen it said, my gosh, this is good old-fashioned filmmaking. That's what you'll hear. Mm-hmm. Good old-fashioned, good old values, just feel-good movie. Mm-hmm. So, oops, this one wins. No. No, 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 Middle America. We know that's the movie you like.
Mm.
It's the movie that nobody wants to see. And it's going to be a typical Hollywood agenda-driven thing that's about the struggle of somebody. And then you get to throw in, you know, the patchwork quilt of causes du jour.
Sure.
And say, we need you to go see this movie about a gay black teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, we kind of want to see La La Land.
Mm-hmm.
So I apologize if it's a long-winded conspiracy, but I've been thinking about it for well over 15 minutes, and I think I got it right.
No, the whole thing is exhausting.
It is.
15 minutes of think time is plenty in that department.
I know, yeah.
Okay, what do you think about your hometown, Chicago? It's reeling after yet another violent weekend. Three more people dead, nine others wounded. What do you make of what's going on in your hometown of Chicago?
It's just disturbing. And, you know, we had Black Lives Matter protests for going on 2 years now. And people don't seem to want to talk about the violence in Chicago because they can't pin it on, you know, an Asian police officer that was in fear for life and shot an unarmed black child. And it's sad whenever that type of stuff happens. But we ignore things. And it's kind of like we make the trivial things super important and we make the important things trivial or non-existent. Mm-hmm. And it disturbs me. We start to believe lies about things. You know, I sometimes think Satan's job has gotten so easy because we're so willing to be gullible, saying, there's not a problem there. There's not a problem there. There's not a problem there that, you know, gosh, if we didn't just, raise taxes. If we could just raise the taxes, that would probably solve this problem. Anyway, next issue, please.
Mm-hmm. Well, you weren't a high school wrestler, but there's been all kinds of interest now about this. So this trans wrestler who is taking copious amounts of testosterone, and she's winning. He's winning. And
undefeated,
and they're having a problem because you have to wrestle as what you were, the gender you were born with, and she identifies as a man or a boy. So there's all kinds of problems with her not being able to wrestle the boys, yet she's cleaning up in the women's wrestling. So
yeah, she took the title, and he took the title. I'll be generous. But I look at that as what I was just saying, that, you know, Satan's job, look how easy it is. Look at the lies people believe, because if you read the stories, and this girl has been taking testosterone shots, which is, by the way, a banned substance. If the boys wrestling team, if they drug tested the kids and found that somebody was getting testosterone shots, they would be kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only did they not kick her out, but when you look at the wording that people use, they say, I don't think the science is there that says that this gives her a competitive advantage.
Hmm.
Now, when you are willing to believe such an obvious lie, I say we've got problems in the world. It isn't just about the trans wrestler who says, look, I don't have a choice. They won't let me wrestle the boys. It's like, well, you do have a choice. You could opt out. You do have a choice. You could say, you know, it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, my bench press just tripled.
Yeah.
So what I get most disturbed is that normal thinking people and you would assume they're intelligent because they've made it this far in life and they're still walking the planet without any, you know, horrible accidents from, you know, dumb decisions. Will, when they say things like, I don't think the testosterone gives her a competitive advantage. It's like you're believing a lie, eating a lie. And I don't know why you're doing that and how you're able to keep a straight face, but it tells you how Satan gets you, that you, once you buy in to some of his agenda, suddenly you go, well, he's going to come to you and say, you now need to go out there and repeat obvious lies, things that you know aren't true. And I need you to keep a straight face about it.
Yeah.
So go do you.
Yeah, it's a head scratcher. Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show. Have a great week. I know you're going on vacation with your family. Have a great time. Enjoy and relax.
Thank you.
Thanks. 27 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us this morning on Faith Radio. Bill Arnold in studio. I'll be right back. Good morning, everyone. 30 minutes after the hour. I hope you are starting your week well. We're going to give you all the info you're going to need to get your day started good. We're going to take a little break, a little news break, and we come back. Lots more here at Faith Radio. Bill Arnold here. Glad to have you with us. Speaker and author Stacey Eldridge says the first step to living the abundant life is to live authentically as God made you to be. This begins with fully giving yourself to God.
The more of God we become really means that we're surrendering more of our life to Him. We're believing that what He says in His Word is true, that we are His beloved. He does love us. And as we believe that, as He takes up more and more residence in our hearts, we are free to let go of falseness, of our false selves, of places where we are hiding and self-protecting or keeping back from actually stepping into who we really are out of fear and doubt. No, the more of His we are, the more our true selves we offer.
You can find the full interview at myfaithradio.com. When we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Adam Carrington, professor of politics at Hillsdale College. Very smart man. Be back in a minute.
Practice what you preach. Easier said than done, right? This is Jim Garlow. My perspective is that a lot of preaching takes place in both the public and private sectors of our country, but what I'm concerned about is practicing what's preached. It's easy to pontificate. Much harder to live it out. I've been teaching and preaching for, well, many years now, and it's harder to live out than it is to say it. You look into the mirror and say, whoa, I don't like what I see. I want my life to be consistent with what I teach and preach. So, what if we did a whole lot less talking and a whole lot more living out the biblical values that we speak about so often? What if we enforced on ourselves the values we want everybody else to live by? Now, that would be a good investment. Well worth the time. Learn more at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. We're delighted that you're with us today. I hope your day is starting well. Bill Arnold here. You know, we every so often get a chance to speak to Dr. Adam Carrington, as a professor of politics at Hillsdale College. One extremely smart man. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
Thanks. Now, there's been all kinds of fallout from CPAC, which is the big conservative coalition of minds that met last week. And let's talk about some of the things that came out of that.
Sure. It was, of course, very lively, as it always is, and you saw sort of the shift that has occurred toward a more realigning of elements of the conservative movement toward the presidency of Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, of course, you had a lot of the more traditional conservative speeches by some, but also very interesting statements by Trump supporters, such as especially his advisors, Steve Bannon, Rince Priebus, and a lot of those guys that I think you are starting to see a struggle for and an attempt at what the Republican Party is going to look like going forward in concrete ways during the Trump era.
How do you like some of the players that are showing up? How do you like Steve Bannon? What do you think of him?
Well, he is a lot smarter than some of his opponents want to admit.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is obviously thinking big. He was thinking big in where he was trying to take Breitbart when he worked with them. He's also, I think, thinking big as far as what he wants to do with the Republican Party. And I think he is trying to remake it along. When he gave his talk, he spoke about three things he wanted to unify: a sort of new Republican Party, a new understanding of conservatism around. One was national security and sovereignty, so that's playing a lot into making immigration a much higher priority than it seemed to be among politicians in Washington before. An economic nationalism, which in many ways is going to be a reversion away from free trade agreements to protectionism of some kind, tariffs. That's a massive shift, actually, from Republican orthodoxy. And then this interesting claim of deconstructing the administrative state, which
mm-hmm.
is an attack on the bureaucracy and the problems to separation of powers it hosts. So some of those things I think traditional Republicans would be interested in, and some are massive shifts in what was the orthodoxy before 2016.
Now, if we can just talk about each one of these quickly and individually, the national security sovereignty, where's all the friction there?
Well, the friction, I think, is twofold. One is the immigration issue that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
How restrictive are we going to be on legal immigration? How restrictive on illegal? And then the other is foreign policy. What role in the world do we need to have given the nature of international politics? And certainly the Trump emphasis seems to be on pulling back our role in the world, more minimizing it, not necessarily isolationist. I think that's wrong to say that's what he wants, but pulling back our commitments in the world and I think the opposition to that is wondering what the world order will look like without America in the lead. I think Trump is saying that it's too costly, and I think there's a large segment of the population that's fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Adam, what do you think is the best Christian viewpoint on all this when it comes to security and sovereignty?
Well, I think it is balancing the two cities that, you know, St. Augustine talked about. He said that there's a city of God and a city of man, and,
mm-hmm.
and human beings are Christians on earth are part of both. They're part of a worldwide community that is the church, and they're part of a particular community that is the nation state. And I think that the approach needs to not be so one-sided that we forget that we're citizens of a country, and not so one-sided that we don't have compassion for those, especially persecuted Christians across the world. And
mm-hmm.
I think, therefore, the thing to look at with a President Trump is how well is he balancing those two, because one could argue that some elements of his support go way one way, American, America only. But it's also can be argued that he's reacting against an idea of what's often called globalism that forgets to respect who we are as citizens of a particular country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, look, that was a great answer, by the way. I want to make sure that you I always want to make sure that we get a Christian perspective on some of these issues, because to me they're a little bit over my head. Now, when we talk about economic nationalism, just explain to our listeners, you know, in very simple terms, what that means.
Well, it again plays into, I think, citizen of the United States versus a participant in the world. And it is the claim that that we need to have a preference for American goods, American workers, America in general, and that actually we should so regulate our economy and regulate the economy that we have with the rest of the world as to prefer American jobs and American workers, which means, you know, if that means that that goods cost more because we put a tax on people on people bringing products in from other countries, that that's worth it because of how we'll be preferring our own country economically. So that is the main, and the main way it's done, like I said, is to give preferences to those who build and sell in America, and to regulate against, punish those who don't.
Mm-hmm. We just have about a minute before we go to breaks, but I do want to ask you again now about the deconstruction of the administrative state. Give us an explanation of what that is.
Well, the administrative state was built up during the progressive movement in the early 20th century, and basically what it said was that the traditional separation of powers that our Constitution has, legislative, executive, and judicial, aren't efficient enough. And in the name of making government a lot larger, what they've done is they've housed legislative, executive, and judicial power all in these executive agencies that make laws, enforce them, and adjudicate them, often without any real connection to the branches that the Constitution established.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one thing Bannon said is that these things need to be undone, both for the sake of consent of the governed, and also he didn't talk as much about this, but hopefully also for the sake of the constitutional structure that the founders put in place.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't Steve Bannon look very disheveled all the time?
Yes.
Kind of looks like me right now in the studio.
I was going to say he would not make a cover of GQ for that, but I let he who is without sin cast the first stone.
Exactly.
I better get the log out of my eye first.
Exactly,
on that.
Adam. All right, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, I'm going to have a big sip of my coffee here, and then I want to talk about the healthcare fight, and that's a big one. There's raucous town halls, and we want to talk about that when we return. It's 45 minutes after the hour. Good morning and welcome to Faith Radio. Morning's Bill Arnold here. I'll be right back. That's me playing guitar. How cool is that? I'm just kidding. That wasn't me. 48 minutes after the hour, Bill Arnold here. Good morning, everybody. Talking to Professor Adam Carrington from the Hillsdale College, Professor of Politics. And Adam, I want to switch gears here to the healthcare fight. This continues to be a very contentious issue, and the town halls are going nuts, aren't they?
Yes. About 30, I believe, Republicans in particular have been holding town halls since recently Congress went on a recess, and they've been pretty raucous. A lot of people worried about the future of the healthcare law, a lot of opposition to the president, and you know, it still remains to be seen how much of a fallout there will be from this, but there definitely is a worry with Republicans saying that after the break they're going to start to take up the healthcare law and whether to repeal and replace it or what to do with it in earnest, that what effect are these going to have?
Now, are these town halls, are they staged? Are they authentic? What is your view on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. They're being accused of being, to borrow a phrase from Nancy Pelosi in 2009, AstroTurf advocacy. I think that there certainly is plenty of evidence that groups are organizing people to go to these town halls.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, it isn't just spontaneous. At the same time, the greater accusation was that all these people are just getting paid to go protest, as if you could do sort of a rent a protester for whatever cause you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's the case. It does seem that there are people genuinely angry and who are really taking a playbook, a page from the playbook of the Tea Party movement in 2009, 2010. If we remember those raucous town halls where people were getting, congressmen were really getting savaged over implementing this law. So we'll see if turnabout is fair play at this point or not going forward.
Mm-hmm. What is the current situation with repeal and replace? Because I've heard the word repair bandied about, and I've also heard, you know, this isn't going to happen, and John Boehner was saying they Republicans can't pull this off, and just curious as to, you know, there are certain elements of the Affordable Care Act, which they want to keep, you know, existing conditions and stay on your parents' policy till you're 26 and lots of good stuff. So how do we keep the best of that and yet repeal it and replace it with something new? If we keep anything from the old, are we actually repealing and replacing, or are we just repairing?
That is a good question, and there are certainly people who say unless you repeal every word, you haven't kept your promises to your voters. And just about every Republican in office now in Congress and in the White House with President Trump have campaigned and won an election in part on repealing and replacing this health care law. So there is pressure on them. And you're right, a lot of people want to keep certain popular elements, either, as you said, the pre-existing conditions, the staying on your parents' health insurance till 26. Here's the problem. The unpopular elements, like the individual mandate, were put in there as a way to try to pay for the costs of these parts that we like.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where things are going to get really interesting is how well can Republicans articulate a plan that keeps some of those more popular provisions but finds a way to pay for them. Otherwise, you're going to continue to have the same spiraling health care costs that you had in the past, and that's going to come up against a lot of opposition. So there was a leaked plan of what some of the House Republicans are thinking, and I think there's a lot in it that could work, but will they have the political muscle to shove it through? Will President Trump be able to put some of his popularity on the line short term with the hope that this will be successful long term? Those are all questions that I think it's going to take months to really see how those things play out, because, you know, things aren't predetermined as far as how human beings are going to act. Well, I guess divinely they are, but we don't know how they're going to act. So mm-hmm. we'll just have to see how those things go.
So it's a lot of it is dealt with from a budgetary standpoint. I mean, they can start defunding certain aspects of it. And I think there was the administration was saying they're not going to penalize people on their taxes this year if they didn't have all 12 months covered. I mean, there are certain things that are happening. And it usually is down to budgetary items. Is that correct or incorrect?
Yes. Well, and here's the thing. The penalty that they're not going to enforce really now was always meant as a way to try to pay for all the costs for the good stuff, the things people liked. It was meant to try to get people to buy insurance who are healthy, and then healthy people buying insurance would help pay for those with pre-existing conditions. It was meant to, if they didn't get on the health insurance, to pay into a fund with the penalty that would offset these things. And the fact is, it's not just budgetary issues for the government, it's budgetary issues for the healthcare companies. They have been pulling out of the exchanges that were set up to buy health insurance because it wasn't financially feasible based on the kind of people that were signing up, as far as how healthy they were, based on a number of economic factors. And I think the main thing Republicans are going to have to do is say, how are we going to make it so companies don't go bankrupt paying for the things we like? And are those choices going to be choices the American people see as acceptable? And I think there are some ways of doing that. But I think that how that will play out in the public debate is what's going to be interesting going forward.
Mm-hmm. Adam, when you hear things like, well, if they repeal this, 18 million people will instantly be out of health care, and I'm not in favor of that at all. I don't think anybody is. But is there ever any discussion as to what the other side of that story is, where there's so many people now where health care has become almost completely unaffordable to them, where they were once able to pay for health care? I mean, my company dropped me, and then my rates went up like $400 a month.
Yes, and I think that's what showing why the health care law stayed so unpopular is it actually did make health care better for a slice of the population that didn't have it or had really, really bad health care and got better health care. But that slice was a really small slice of the American populace, mm-hmm. maybe 15-20%, whereas 70-80% of the American populace was actually having your experience. And that's the thing. That's why whatever the replacement is, it needs to be something that drives down healthcare costs for average Americans who have it. And I think that's going to be the question going forward. And I think there are some things in the leaked plan that came out from Politico, such as having states have more control over what is minimum healthcare, having maybe a tax credit that is different based on your age to have you buy health insurance, making health insurance more competitive as far as what providers can give, but also guaranteeing basic health benefits. Those are all things that I think could drive down costs, but we'll see how it goes. You've learned in 2016 not to act like you're a prophet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just disappointed when I heard that it was 26. You could stay on your parents' policy till 26. I thought it was 86, so I was really kind of disturbed when I heard that because I was hopeful for a little while.
I decided not to send a Mother's and Father's Day card when that happened because I figured what was the point.
Exactly. Thanks, Adam. Have a great week.
You too. Thanks.
56 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. Good morning, everybody. Bill Arnold here. We're having a great start to a great week. I hope you are excited about what God has put in your life to do today. It's sometimes a big challenge. Sometimes the day feels daunting, doesn't it? So go to God's Word. Go there for strength and encouragement. Put it in your heart. Bind it around your neck. Write it on the tablet of your heart. And go out in strength. God will give you the strength to do whatever you need to do today. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a human suffering from a very well-known surgeon. It's going to be a great piece. Be back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.